The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome along to the show. And today we're going to be discussing Fulham's thrashing of Millwall. It ended 2-1 at the Den. And quite frankly, it should have probably finished 8-0. But hey, who wants to make life easy for themselves? We'll be reacting to Tuesday's demolition of the Lions down in South Bermondsey. It was a wonderful evening for all that were there, and I'm sure for all that were watching at home on the telly. We'll also be previewing Saturday's visit of Hull to Craven Cottage, and no doubt discussing the future of a certain Fabio Carvalho. And here to discuss all of that with me today is Mr. Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
How are we doing?
Yeah, good, good. All recovered, just about, I think.
Yeah, we had a reasonably late night on Tuesday. I've got a question for you, actually, before we get anywhere. But first, let me introduce the Fulham writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, Jack. How are we doing?
Oh, very, very good, mate. Thank you. I've had kind of two nights out in a row, and like I'm just feeling it a little bit today. I don't know. I'm
getting old, mate.
I am getting old. I mean, I'm 30 next year, and I need to sort my life out. Is basically what we're saying.
Yeah, well, it's fine. So you're fine until that point. Once that moment comes, we'll have a discussion about it.
It's not okay, Jack. It's not okay. All right, Jack. Before we go anywhere, I remember late on Tuesday night, we were in the old King's Head by London Bridge, having a couple of celebratory pints, and two Fulham fans who listened to the pod came up to you and said, "Can you give us a shout out on the podcast?" And you said, "Sammy, please, can you remind me to do the shout out?" So, can you remember their names?
Yeah, William and Liam. To be fair, it's sensible because both the names roll into one if you can work it out. But yeah, William and Liam, I met at halftime. They were well nice and they loved the pod. So they were like, "Can we have a shout out?" And I was like, "Yes, of course you can."
You were really like, "Oh, I'm going to forget."
I was going to forget, but it's okay. Thank you. I would have forgotten. So okay, respect.
Good.
Respect. I wouldn't have forgotten the names, but I would have forgotten. To do the shout out.
I'm amazed that we remembered anything after Tuesday, but here we go. Let's do some three-word reviews from Tuesday's game. Jack, you were having a bit of a scroll through Twitter. There were some very, very good ones.
Yeah, Connor Daly probably won the day, I'd say, with seriously fabulous performance, which is very good. Stephen O'Byrne's nail-biting blowout, I liked a lot, and there was a couple on that kind of vibe. Keith with Millwall thrashed narrowly, I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
Then there was a couple of Luke Kelly's Marco's Millwall massacre. Julian Hare with Den and Dusted, which I liked a lot.
That's brilliant. That's got to be a pod name contender. Come on, Den
it
and Dusted.
It does have to be. It does have to be. Cam Ramsey, our very own, with Carvalho's Lion Carvery, I thought was very good. And Michael Smith at MCSmith999, Diego Armando Carvalho.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. Well, chaps, look, I premiered this on Sunday's podcast, but just for your listening pleasure. All aboard. All aboard. HMS Piss the League. We're now no longer top of the league, which I'm very upset about, Peter, after West Brom decided to put some goals past Sheffield United last night. Your thoughts on Tuesday. I just enjoyed your text in the group yesterday, Peter, where you just said, "Fulham are so good."
Well, it's true. It's true. And it's all a bit strange, to be honest. I've seen 8 goals already, 3 games into the season. It's 7 in a week.
Yeah,
which is very, very exciting, and to be honest, you know, the football that Fulham played at times on Tuesday night at the Den was so, so special. I think in the first half, the intensity, the speed, Millwall didn't have any answer, and I guess you expect it from a squad like that, but to actually not only make the most of those players, but to play in such an attacking and positive way with bodies flying forward, it was really, really enjoyable, an electric start to the game. And you know, it's, you know, we'll talk about it, but it was a mystery how it ended up being 2-1 and how it became so nervy, but Fulham managed to see it out in the end. And I think it was a bit of a statement performance. Maybe it won't have caught the eye too much because of the scoreline. Maybe Huddersfield would have done that. But in terms of performance, this was by far Fulham's best of the season. And you know, if we are only three games in and Marco Silva's still talking about how it would take time to imprint his identity, then, you know, I mean, it's exciting. It's very, very exciting. And yeah, that's more than merit to text. Then Fulham are so good because at the moment, they really do look like it.
Yeah, Jack, what an electric start. 2 minutes in, Fulham 1-0 up. 7 minutes in, Fulham 2-0 up. And actually, within about 20 minutes, should have been three had Cavallero stuck his chance away. Just looked like every time we went forward, it was going in. And what I think we kind of said in the build-up to this game was Huddersfield are really bad. It's hard to fully judge Fulham on Saturday's win as good as it was. And we said Millwall is a much tougher game, much more of a litmus test of where Fulham are. And we've passed that litmus test for sure.
Yeah, with flying colours. It was one of those where I was trying to say to people, they were like, Millwall are rubbish. And I was like, I don't actually think they are. Like, I don't think they're that bad. And that's, they didn't play particularly well. We'll caveat that with that. It is a point of they didn't pick up. They didn't do anything I kind of expected them to do. But I think Fulham made them look poor. And that's something to be impressed about. It's something to be excited about. You know, this is a Millwall side that I have in and around the playoffs, you know, in kind of where I was looking at the season before it started. And, you know, maybe you compare and contrast that to Borough, who are another side that I had in and around the playoffs, and say that Borough are much more physically demanding unit. They're a little bit more resilient. They're a little bit more know what they're about. But it did feel like Fulham just were like, no, we're just better than you and we're going to put you to the sword. And look, we can come on to the fact that we made it difficult for ourselves. Of course we did. And of course it was going to be a stupid header that bounced off someone. And of course it was going to be Malone involved and Smith involved. And, you know, I mean, what's the name of this podcast? But it did feel like we, you know, should have been 4-5-0 up at that point. And, you know, yes, Cav misses. I'm still furious that Cav hasn't taken that on his right foot. I don't know what he's doing. He's right footed. Like, he needs to, why doesn't he take that on his right peg? Is one thing. There's some heroic defending from Millwall to block a couple of the chances that get done from the pullback in the second half. There's some really good saves from Białkowski. He saves that shot from Mitrovic on the swivel, which is a really, really good down, and gets back up again to deny Fabio as well. But I think that Fulham are inching towards where we need to be. And that's exciting. It's something that we can look forward to. And I think that there are going to be games this year, and we said it after Borough, there are going to be games this year where we absolutely batter teams and don't get what we deserve. And Tuesday could have been another one, which is scary because of how good we were. So there is that element of take your chances, get Fulham into a place where we're really, really ticking. But I'm confident. I feel happy. And again, like I tweeted the next day, but I believe in this side. You know, it's the bodies piling forward every time we get the ball. It's, you know, it's the ability to get those overlaps working, to get pullbacks back into the area and in places that are dangerous for Mitrovic. So there was a couple of pullbacks that, you know, narrowly avoided people and just ended up with a Millwall defender and got cleared. And you look at those as almost like, oh, that was a shame. But actually, that's exactly what you want. You want Josh Onuma hitting the byline. You want the fullbacks hitting the byline. What we're finding is Fulham starting to find an attacking rhythm again. And that is so exciting.
Yeah, Peter, Jack touched upon it there. The midfield engine in the first half, it was Seri and Onuma. Onuma went off at halftime, which was a real shame. But then on came Frank Zappa and Giza, yeah. Which just had Fulhamish tweeted the Simpsons gif, which was stop, he's already dead, which was just the perfect summation of what that substitution kind of entailed. And you're thinking, Jesus Christ, they've had the toughest first half and now we're bringing on a record signing who quite frankly should be playing in European competition this year, not in the second tier. But that midfield engine just drove Fulham, and Millwall just couldn't get out of their own half at times, could they? Because we just snapped the ball back, and quite often it was Seri at the heart of that.
I think by the end of the first half, I was looking around the Millwall team, and because of what the Den is like and because of the noise the home fans can generate, and you know, it wasn't completely one-way traffic in the first half. There was a decent little spell, I think, after the two goals where Fulham just dropped off a little bit. The crowd tried to get behind the team, and Millwall just didn't have the quality to break Fulham down. I actually thought Tim Ream and Tosin were absolutely outstanding as well. It's actually quite difficult to... It was to a man. Everyone was very good. But there was that period where they had to ride that pressure. to come through it. And yet they never really looked under any pressure. And despite that noise, despite the fact that it was at the Den, despite some of the tackles that Millwall were throwing in, mainly on the line. I mean, there were a few nasty ones on Fabio, but in general, you know, it was tough. And yet Fulham were able to match their intensity and beat it. Even after that point. And I guess that comes down to some of the quality in midfield. You know, I think Jean-Michel Seri, the last couple of games, has been excellent. We've really seen what he can do technically on the ball in terms of moving it from left to right, in terms of dictating the tempo of the game. He stands in the middle and he's pointing at everyone. He's telling everyone where to be. He genuinely does seem to run this thing. Josh Onuma, as you said, it's such a shame he went off with a knock. I really hope that's not serious, because the last two games he's been brilliant. Not just in terms of his work rate in midfield, he's fantastic at reclaiming the ball. He's been doing a lot, especially on Tuesday night. But his driving runs, his dribbling, he complements Fabio quite well. Fabio's a lot about movement. He's very good when he's dribbling with it too. He's very quick, very nippy. Onuma can beat a man quite comfortably. He can go around them. He's deceptively quite quick as well.
Yeah.
So, when you're bringing on Anguissa at halftime, it isn't particularly fair. And Anguissa, particularly with the way Fulham are playing at such intensity, you wouldn't assume that he would sort of slot into that, because he has that languid style, as we've talked about before, and everything seems to slow down when he gets possession. But even he slotted in really comfortably. I'm just running away with praise a little bit here. But
Anguissa is one of those footballers, though, that when you're winning, what a player to have in the side as well. What a, almost like taking the, it looks like he's taking the piss half the time. Well, I don't think he is. It's just his style, but he's like flicking it over players' heads. He does it so often.
He did that at the end of the game. I think it was after 2-1 where he flicked the ball over Jed Wallace's head? You know, Fulham are trying to retain the ball, and there he is just flicking it over Jed Wallace's head, then running 40 yards across the pitch in possession.
Yeah, there was a moment there where you kind of wanted him to, there was no one could get anywhere near him. The body feints were going, you know, left, right, centre. He was sending defenders packing, and you were like, go on, just go all the way. And I think he went out wide and Joe Bryan got it. And then we tucked back and went in back on ourselves. But there was a point where Anguissa was just marching through the middle, and you're kind of a bit like, go on, just go, just go. No, because no one's coming anywhere close. The defenders are absolutely terrified, because, you know, someone of that physicality, but also with that amount of, like, you know, technique and finesse on their touch is incredibly difficult to stop in a small area. Even if they foul him there, you know, you're like, okay, we'll take 15 minutes with this free kick. That's fine. Like, that's not a problem at all. And Cabada's on the pitch. We're like, it'll be great. It'll be great and fun. It was one of those moments where he started to really turn it on after we got to 2-1, and it was like, okay. So Anguissa has obviously been like, no, we're not losing this. Sorry. Like, I'm not having that. and basically did it by himself. So there we have it.
In a tactical sense, what was really interesting about the midfield, obviously had Seri dropping deep, but then particularly with Onuma and particularly with when Anguissa came on, they would almost step high enough to pull one of Millwall's three centre halves out, who would then have to step up because of the speed that Fulham were moving the ball from left to right. None of the midfielders were able to get tight enough. They tried to get close to Fabio every single time, but because of that movement in midfield, they couldn't get close to them because of the speed of the ball. Suddenly you end up with these, every now and again, there would be those moments where Anguissa is suddenly in loads of space and then Fabio is suddenly in loads of space. And you think, well, how have they done that? They were just pulling people apart the whole time. And it wasn't like Millwall weren't trying to press, weren't trying to sort of match what Fulham were doing. They just couldn't get close enough to them. And it was very, very impressive to watch. And you actually mentioned Neeson Cabana there. We haven't mentioned him, but he was so good. And it was just, yeah. I mean, I was horrible. Who was it on the left-hand side? Was it Cooper? Or?
Yeah, it was Coop. It was Cooper. Yeah. It was Jake Cooper. And honestly, I think my man had to sit down for a dizzy spell at one point. Like, he got nutmegged so many times that you're like, oh God, like, this is like a training exercise to see how many times. It's like, you know, like Cabana was like, I think maybe might have thought that every time we nutmeg someone, we got a goal. You know, like I used to play at school. You know, I get a couple of nutmegs and it actually just counts for a goal. I think Cabana was playing that game.
In the second half, every time they managed to get Cabana isolated against one of those three centre halves who were just quite lumbering, and it was just awful to watch if you're a Millwall fan. But I mean, Cabana was excellent, absolutely brilliant.
It was one of the best performances I've ever seen from Cabana. You know, when we always talk about the free kicks and like his impact in that kind of like playoff run, which was good, and he wasn't just about those free kicks in that run, but also I just think overall the performance was fantastic from him. And actually, you know, this is a Fulham side that were missing Harry Wilson, we were missing Bobby Decadova, Reed Jack, and we just kind of found replacements in Cavan, Cabano that fitted the system, and it was all kind of fine and dandy, really. I mean, we didn't need to be worried, but
there's a lot to come, isn't there? Harrison Reed still to come back as well. You know, this is there's a lot yet in this Fulham side, and if these signings come in, it looks like Rodrigo Muniz is close now. At this point, it looks like that's pretty much a done deal. You know, he's to come in now. Whether he's going to make an impact straight away or not is a different question. But like, you know, there's a lot still to happen here, and that's terrifying. Surely for everyone else.
The only thing I do have with Fulham at the moment, I feel like my relationship with Fulham this season is in the honeymoon phase, where everything's great and, you know, we're having a lovely time and, you know, we've got John Mikel Seri and Frank Zambo and Guiso and it all feels wonderful. And actually, you know, the transfer window is still just under 2 weeks away and we could lose some of these amazing players, particularly Seri and almost certainly Anguissa. But Fulham at this stage are just going, well, we've got them, we might as well use them, which is a bit of a contrast to what Marcus Silva was saying a few weeks ago. Peter, let's come on to the man of the moment, the man of the match, Fabio Carvalho. I noticed on the Fulhamish player ratings, which are notoriously harsh, the Fulhamish player ratings that are done by fans, even on this occasion, Fabio managed to get over a 9, which is basically a 10. If you can get over a 9 on those player ratings, the way that the averages work out, then yeah, you've basically completed the game. He was just unbelievable in that 10 slot. It's like every first touch just gave him so much space, and you know, the finish for the second, the setup for the first, his overall play, he could have set up another 3 or 4, Peter. He probably could have scored another 2 or 3. Oh, what a player we have on our hands, who I feel like at the moment he looks like he's in some inner turmoil though, between, you know, really enjoying what he's got, but I feel like I can see on the pitch this kind of this decision that he's got to make over his contract and the fact that his future is really uncertain. I don't know. It looked almost be playing on his mind. Is that fair to say?
I don't know, mate. If he's that's been playing on his mind, then imagine what he's going to be like when it's not.
Well, exactly.
There was just a couple of moments at the end, maybe, put it that way, or where, you know, a couple of players were having to kind of come over to him and like, no, come on, like you can celebrate this moment. I mean, maybe I was reading too much into it. Let's focus on his performance before we talk about the contract stuff.
In terms of his performance, he's clearly a special talent. I mean, when you watched him at 23's level, you just saw that he was a cut above everyone else. And that now he's actually stepped up into the first team. Yes, this is the championship, but he looks a cut above again. And to do that, bear in mind, we talked about a very high quality Fulham team here. And we're picking him out above the others, really, in terms of his play. It speaks volumes for his ability. And his movement was very, very good. He really does seem to drift off Mitrovic very well. To be fair to Mitrovic, the way he sort of dropped deep allowed those runners to come forward quite often. And his role is certainly more rounded than I think it's been previously. And he seems to be buying into that too, which is really encouraging. Certainly enjoyed himself as well with the Millwall fans.
That's amazing.
But yeah, in terms of Fabio, his tempo on the ball, his dribbling. I think I mentioned in the piece afterwards, there was one, I think the Cavalero break where he's standing up Kiftenbeld, and Kiftenbeld is literally just turning side to side. And Carvalho doesn't even look like he's doing anything overly particular, but he's just dropping his shoulder left to right. And then suddenly he's just opened up into space, feeds the right pass to Cavalero, and then obviously Cavalero missed. But he's such a creative force, and he's relishing the system that Silva's playing. I think we talked about it when Silva came in, how important a number 10 is to him. It was the same in Greece, Olympiacos, same at Sporting, at Estoril. And he tried it at Everton, didn't quite work with Sigurdsson, but you know, here it just looks like a player who can score goals, can create opportunities, and is just thriving, almost playing beyond the striker, finding those pockets of space, being allowed to exploit them, being allowed to try things. But the most impressive thing for me was the way in which he's managing these games, because they've been pretty brutal, especially this last week in terms of the tackles. I mean, Huddersfield was pretty bad too, but Tuesday night was another step up in terms of the, I think he's fouled multiple times. There was one in the second half where Jed Wallace just boots him into the air and it wasn't even booked. And it's every time he'd get back up, every time he would get back on and carry on playing, it didn't seem to faze him. And I wonder if that's what you're sort of referring to a bit, where towards the end, he's probably getting a bit weary of it. I thought he might have been taken off because of how much he was being targeted. Resilience to him, and there is clearly an element of his character that's like, no, I'm not just gonna take this. I'm gonna try and give it back. The way he would make recoveries, the way he would compete for things, he was competing for headers with 6 foot centre halves and holding midfielders, and he would just get knocked to the floor afterwards. But it didn't really seem to matter to him, and that's what's really exciting. I think that the clearly this is a kid who's determined to learn, he's determined to compete, and right now it's so exciting, and you couldn't escape the symmetry. I know it's been all over socials as well of him celebrating in the same way that Ryan Sessegnon did.
Yeah, amazing.
A few years ago, and it's a really exciting time. I think it was about after 10 minutes, it was very obvious what everyone's thinking. It's like, bloody hell, that man has to sign a contract. He has to sign a new contract.
Which I think is, I guess, what I was finding like something on Tuesday that I wouldn't say uncomfortable, but I almost just felt a bit sad. I was just a bit like, you know, the crowd was singing Carvalho, we want you to stay. And it must just be so overwhelming for him right now. Everything that was, you know, what is happening on the pitch must be overwhelming for an 18-year-old that was not an unknown 6 months ago, but in terms of Fulham fans, but in terms of the wider football world, no one would have really known who Fabio Carvalho is. And now the world's talking about him. He put us in a display like that. I just think it's such a shame that he's kind of going through this contract thing. I really hope it's resolved soon so we can just enjoy Fabio Carvalho for the player he is. And there's not always the, oh, and will he sign a contract? Peter, you did do an article this week on the contract situation with some comments from Silva's press conference last week that were embargoed, so you couldn't say too much. So what was it exactly that Silva said? It seems encouraging. That's the main thing. And obviously, if you want to get more on Peter's article, theathletic.com/Fulham Pod, if you want to subscribe, get 33% off the subscription. And it's a very, very important article if you're interested in the future of Carvalho. But without spoiling the article, Peter, what are the kind of key takeaways from it?
No, in terms of what Marco Silva's been saying, that it was his quotes ahead of Huddersfield that were embargoed for the Saturday, and basically said it was important that, obviously, for Fulham that he signs. I think that's very clear in the performances that we've seen, but also that it was important for him that he does renew his contract, that he doesn't, you know, basically, he said it a few times now, like, he's got to keep his feet on the ground. Because as you say, Sammy, this is all coming very, very quickly. It is a big step up from the exposure you get at 23 level. There'll be the odd, you know, the odd few comments and on forums and whatever. And you know, I've done a couple of pieces on him, but there's not quite the same level as it is now, where you've got the entire away end serenading him every week, and everyone's focusing on it. You look on social media, you look at the responses to the club account, to Tony Khan's account, to just general chat. It's just sign a contract, and he'll see all of that. He will see all of that, and trying to adapt to that it's one of those big challenges. And I think Silva's very aware of that process. And after Millwall, I did an update on his contract, and it's not been straightforward, but my sort of understanding is it's looking more and more likely that he will sign, that he will commit to signing a new contract, and which is really, really encouraging. And you know, with these things, that things can turn very quickly, but it does feel like player wants to. What I'm hearing is that he sees the value of Marco Silva and working under Marco Silva and what he's able to get out of him. And obviously the club wants to tie him down. I mean, the club desperate to tie him down. And there is interest. There has been interest for ages. I mean, even last season where we first did a piece on him, it was mentioned to me that, you know, Benfica and Juventus were watching him, or the Portuguese clubs are definitely watching him. He is a talent. That interest is there. But right now, I mean, even just from my own opinion, I think the best thing for him absolutely is to stay. moving is always a risk. It doesn't matter how good your talent is. There's always that element of uncertainty. And when you're 18 years old with a handful of senior appearances, with the opportunity to be a leading player and one of the best teams in the Championship that are going to go up to the Premier League and the exposure that's going to get you, it just, for me, it's a no-brainer. And yeah. If he wants to go on to whoever else in a few years' time, I don't think many will begrudge him because of his talent. Obviously, we wouldn't want to, Fulham fans wouldn't want to hear that, but that's sometimes how it works. And, in terms of after Tuesday, again, it was Silva was praising the way he's learning, how quickly he's taking things on, and how impressed he's been with his performances, and then again keeping his feet on the ground. But in terms of his contract, which is what everyone wants to know, the signs are pretty positive. And this is more my opinion than something that I've heard and will know. But if it is, it should probably be resolved by the end of the month, or will have a clear, very clear direction by the end of the month. Purely on the basis that a player of his ability, I don't think Fulham can let this drag on beyond August. I mean, they would certainly want to get something for him rather than let him pass on and then you have compensation and whatever. But this is something that they need to address quickly. And we've talked about Jean-Michel Seri and we talked about Andre Franck-Nguissa and Marco Silva saying, you know, I want these players to be committed. Fabio's played every game as well, and I think if this was causing him an issue, if there was real uncertainty about his future, I'd be surprised if Silva had kept using him in the same way. I think things are encouraging. My understanding is things are encouraging. So now it's just a question of actually signing the contract and keeping him here. And if he does, I mean, what a fantastic boost that would be for Fulham.
Signing de Ting is how you say it, Peter. Sorry.
Yes, I do apologise. Signing de Ting.
Thank you.
There we go. That's what we wanted.
The cultural touch points of this podcast registers, eh?
Jack, I was actually a little bit surprised, and I don't know if this makes me some heathen that I didn't know this. I just straight up thought that Carvalho was born in Portugal and would play for Portugal. I was quite shocked to suddenly see he's actually in the England youth setup. He moved to England in 2013, so that's why he obviously qualifies for dual nationality. I'm not trying to get him on the Gareth, get him on the plane bandwagon just yet when he's played three games in the Championship as well as he's played, but it was just a slight pleasant surprise to me. There might be some other people listening that might not have realised that actually that is the direction he's going down at the moment. Obviously, being the nationality you are, Jack, playing at youth level does not necessarily mean that you play for the senior team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd strongly encourage Fabio to really think about this and probably declare for Portugal, if I'm honest. But here we are. All I'm saying is Fabio Leandro Freitas Gouveia Carvalho probably should play for
beautiful
Portugal.
English name.
He was at Benfica until he was 2013 and then came over. And I saw a really nice post from Ballum the other day, actually, who posted saying, Fabio played for us for a couple of years before he, joined the Fulham Academy in earnest. And they were like, we're really proud of him. And I was like, that's really nice. But yeah, born in Lisbon and then came over to London at about, yeah, sort of 11, 12. So, there's a lot there. And it's a nice kind of mix of things going on. So he is eligible for both. He has played, I think, six times for England's under 18. So at the moment, it looks very much so that he's going to be part of that England setup, or at least the England youth setup, for a little while longer. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah, indeed. I'm certainly not just putting him down that road. I was just, it was something that I'd noticed and I was interested in. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to do another transfer update.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Peter Rutzler.
Hello, hello.
One thing I wanted to get your opinion on, Peter, is from the press box. What was it? What was the atmosphere like from the away end? In the away end, it felt like one of the best away atmospheres I remember in an awfully long time. I think the Fulham fans felt like they were in good voice. Well, obviously, you were halfway down the pitch. Your thoughts?
Genuinely, it was really, really impressive. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a Fulham podcast and I write about Fulham and need Fulham fans to like me. Genuinely, it was very, very impressive. Like, you're very, very loud on Tuesday night. And the Den, when the home fans do get behind the team, when they do see something of moderate encouragement, they do make one hell of a noise. But no, it was really enjoyable, actually, just to be in that kind of atmosphere. And obviously, it helps when Fulham go 2-0 up so quickly. But No, you weren't. It wasn't just, wasn't self-fulfilling, Sammy. You were okay. Making a really good noise on Tuesday night.
Yeah. I mean, Jack, it was one of those evenings that it reminded me so much in many ways of the 3-0 under Jukanovic. It was kind of the same kind of like weather. It was that feel good factor. We were very, very loud. Slight difference in the game that Millwall didn't have that motivation like they did on that particular evening. Like, that was much more seismic a result because Millwall were also flying at that time where we played them, but there felt like a lot of similarities.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from. I think it's that moment when you start well, right? And you know how quick Fulham got out of the blocks and suddenly everyone was like, oh God, we're unbelievable. And as soon as that happens, like, you start to get that boost. Everyone's like, right at it, right amongst it. And yeah, it was really nice. And look, I suppose like the difference is we didn't get that kind of weird thing where we got stuck in the pen because they just didn't do the pen. And that, I suppose, speaks to the fact that there wasn't huge amounts of Millwall there. And there wasn't huge amounts of ag, to be perfectly honest with you. They, you know, we got on the trains back afterwards and everyone was just sort of mixed in together and it was just fine, really, wasn't it? So, yeah, it was a funny one.
I enjoyed what happened on your train. I enjoyed what happened on your train.
So basically, we got on the thingy and one of the Millwall fans was like, oh, loads of Fulham on here, haven't I? Everyone was like, wee. And then he basically was like, oh, what do we have in common then? He was like, what do we think of Chelsea? And everyone was like, wee. So that all went off. It was funny. It's the only thing in common is we really hate Chelsea. And so that the lad next to me just went, to be fair, we don't really like West Ham either. So wee.
That's good. It's these London rivalries. Everyone goes, oh, it's a London derby. And it's like, yeah, it is. I mean, no, it's not that much bad feeling. They think we're pansies and we're like, okay, mate, you're not on Green Street either. But half the time, but it's not that much depth of feeling really between Millwall and Fulham. There's not much depth of feeling for Fulham and many London clubs outside the West London enclave. Speaking of the West London enclave, can there have been a better set of results, by the way, than Saturday in terms of West London? Obviously, you had that lot up the road beating Arsenal, which we didn't enjoy. You had QPR winning 3-0 at Hull. I think Wadham Green beat Crystal Palace 3-0 and then we won 5-1 away at Huddersfield. There can't surely have been too many better weekends for West London in terms of results. Not that it made me happy, but...
No. Yeah, it was quite something. And look, the way that we're going and the way that the QPR have started as well, massive result for them last night. They beat Middlesbrough away with 10 men. So if it carries on like this, we could have all of us in the old top tier next year. You never know.
It would be quite remarkable if that was the situation. Three West London derbies in the Premier League, like nearly making up a quarter, waking up 1/5 of the Premier League would be from West London. But let's not get ahead of ourselves too soon. Peter, transfers. What's the latest on our man Rodrigo Muniz?
Oh, sorry, I'm miles away. No, say.
I'm on a podcast.
Sorry.
He's done it again.
I was just reading something. No, Rodrigo's still in Spain, still in quarantine. We're pretty much on the home straight with that. So, if it doesn't go through at this point, I'd be very surprised. But I think we're in the quarantine period now, and then once the final boxes are ticked, I think we'll see him soon. But I think we mentioned it earlier in the podcast in terms of when we'll see him. Like, it could be a while. Just in terms of getting him up to speed, and obviously this whole thing has dragged on for quite a long time, and. So it'll get there, but it is happening.
Okay, well, exciting. We can't wait for that day to drop. I feel like we'll break the internet when finally we see Rodrigo holding a Fulham shirt. Imagine if he's played us all this time and he then moves to Borough. I don't want to see it.
Obviously, you don't want to see it.
No, but like, as in, like, I can't face the meltdown more than I don't want to see Rodrigo Muniz in a Borough shirt. Just literally, the internet will implode. A couple other rumours this week. Jack, probably your area of expertise. These two, whether they happen or not, remains to be seen, but they seem like rumours with interest. The first one was Bruno Paz from Sporting. Do we know much about Bruno?
Not huge amounts, no. He's not featured all that heavily for Sporting. They've obviously had Palinha in there in that kind of position, and therefore he's not really got too many minutes, but you know, it'd be an interesting one. It looks like another one that the Marco Silva is kind of asking for himself, someone that he's kind of pushing forward, which is kind of an interesting change of pace on transfers and on our targets. So there's that element. It's just kind of one of those strange ones that we're not completely convinced that. I mean, he's not the youngest. He hasn't really kicked through into the Sporting first team. He's 23 years old. He spent more time really in the Sporting B team than anywhere else. He's played quite a lot in kind of their equivalent of PL2 in the Liga Portugal too. Someone who I spoke to at Sporting says that they really liked him, and he was someone that they thought was going to push into, you know, first team contention before the emergence of Palinha as basically this like absolute revelation in that position. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. It's someone that I think you'd be hard pressed to find many people that know much about outside of Portugal. If Marco Silva wants him and Marco Silva knows him, then I'd be interested to see what he sees in him that perhaps Ruben Amorim doesn't.
Yeah, and one person that you'll almost certainly know more about, Jack, whether this comes true, but Tancredi Palmieri tweeted this the other day, fairly reputable man on all things Italy, about Mbala and Zola from Spezia. Mm. This is a man that has made a big impact. Apparently ourselves and West Brom interested, which would be very, very interesting to see if this actually happens alongside Muniz, and also with Mitrovic still there, because you'd have thought we wouldn't need another forward, but here we are.
Yeah, and Zola, if you remember, we were actually linked to him last year as well. He's someone who came through really rapidly. You know, his first season in Serie A, and he really did kind of score 11 goals for a Spezia side that were more impressive than I think most people gave him credit for. He played like very much as a centre forward. He has played as a wide forward before in kind of other periods of his career, but you know, it is at Spezia where he really seems to have, you know, taken on the mantle of being a full-on centre forward. I'd be surprised if this goes through. Spezia obviously lost their coach, Vincenzo Italiano, to Fiorentina. And he would have been someone who Enzola respected and who'd got the best out of him. But I can't see that Spezia just letting their kind of main goal threat through in a season where I think they're going to struggle a fair bit, you know, to get themselves into the same positions that they were last year. So, yeah, one to keep an eye on, I think. But I'd be surprised if this goes through. Especially, there's also links to Michael Obafemi from Southampton at the moment. So I think that with Muniz coming in, and you know, maybe Marco Silva wants three forwards. Maybe that's where he's at. Maybe he sees Muniz as one for the future rather than for this season, and that's why we're seeing this kind of transfer touted. But yeah, I'm not sure. We'll keep an eye on it. But a good player, definitely a good player in there. But just the fact that he's only had one Serie A season, and we've seen him not, you know, light the world up across the rest of his career, just something just to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Peter, a lot of people might be worried about this link moving Tosin away from Fulham to Southampton. They lost Vestergaard to Leicester. Is there legs in this one? It feels like one of those logical transfers.
My Southampton colleague, Dan Sheldon, has written that they are interested. Whether there's legs in it is a different sort of question. I think if you're Tosin, you'd probably be looking at the Premier League, as I think a lot of players who drop down to Championship would be. Of the clubs in the Premier League who are looking at centre-halves and are in a position to maybe buy him, it would probably be Southampton at the moment, considering the fact that they've lost Vestergaard and haven't replaced him yet. But again, in terms of the finances it would take to take him away from Fulham, obviously he had that £10 million release clause, which has expired. So you're looking at a fee probably just above that. If Fulham are happy to let him go, and
I'd say slightly heavier than that. I'd be sure that Fulham are pushing for sort of £15 million on at this point. Otherwise, there's no point having.
Yeah, I mean is it's going to be above £10 million.
Oh right.
I know Southampton have that money, but whether they're in a position to reinvest it and then reinvest it in terms of salary as well, it's a difficult one. So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of things up in the air in the moment in terms of outgoings. We've talked about Anguissa and Seri. There's interest, but interest doesn't necessarily correlate to an offer on the table. An offer on the table doesn't necessarily mean a deal will get done. So it's very early. There will be interest in someone like Tosin because he's a good player. You can clearly play at Premier League level. Not early days is what I'd put it. But in terms of interest, yeah, I would be surprised anyway if he wasn't on Southampton's list as an option. But it seems like he is, certainly. So
in terms of finance, if we were to sell Tosin for £15 million, I'd be gutted because he's an integral part of this team. But it would be an unbelievable profit in 12 months on a player, wouldn't it? From £2 million to like reported £15 million just shows like what a bit of business that was. Like, I know that like a lot of people don't want to give Tony Khan credit, and look, I sit on the fence here, but that particular deal, and you look at his value now, is a master stroke, really. And at the time
it seemed crazy because he's an England player. We're talking about everyone knowing we're in a post-Brexit environment. I think it was pretty ridiculous, to be honest. So I mean, whatever, if he does go, whatever fee they do get, it will be a good sizable profit, and for that, you know, you have to give credit. So We'll see. I mean, you touched on the strikers there, Jack, in terms of some of the rumours. Obviously, Abubakar Kamara has gone now. He's gone to Aris. That's all gone through. I think the Greek club went a little early in terms of their pitches and saying he was on the way when I was sort of told that. So I think I put out saying Abubakar Kamara has gone and he was on his way to Greece and whatever. But I was told that, you know, the paperwork hadn't arrived yet. So it was a case of, okay, they've gone very early here. But he's now gone, and that does just leave Mitrovic. Now, if Mitrovic gets an injury, Fulham are in a bit of trouble. So I do wonder whether there is that sense of can we wait for Rodrigo Muniz? And it'd be interesting to see what Fulham do. That, to be honest, that's the one concern, and maybe we'll talk about that in the preview, but in terms of injuries in the squad at the moment, in terms of the numbers that seem to do, they're just slowly building up, and the way Fulham play, they do seem to get targeted because it seems to be one of the only ways teams can stop them at the moment is to just kick them. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, obviously Josh Onmar went off, Bobby Doherty wasn't involved. Where does that leave the squad? Because, you know, he had Jay Stansfield and we've seen Tyrese Francois can play, but I don't think Stansfield would have come on in that environment on Tuesday night. So there's certainly room for that. And of course, if Seria or Anguissa go, then they would have to be replaced. So it does feel a bit holding pattern, I think. That's how I feel about the situation anyway.
Yeah, indeed. All right, we'll take a quick break. And as Peter says, let's preview Saturday's visit of Hull. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Peter and Jack. Let's look ahead then to Saturday's visit of Hull to Craven Cottage. And Jack, a mixed start to life back in the Championship for Hull. There was that amazing opening day win away at Preston, then got battered by a good QPR side that are clearly going to be in the upper echelons of the league, but then losing to Derby on Wednesday night, massive blow. You'd have thought that this is a game that a Fulham side in confidence should be able to hopefully take full advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in that QPR game, George Moncur got sent off. He's kind of the big creative force in this side. So he's going to be missing again. They played Matt Smith, the young Welsh lad, at sort of in the kind of advanced role in the midfield against Derby. He's a defensive midfielder, been thrust into a more advanced role, really. It didn't really work. Josh McGuinness is the only real, I mean, I say household name, is the only name that the people might recognise in this side. It's a really kind of different whole side to the ones that you'll remember from when we were in the, you know, kicking around and in the Championship with them. You know, the days of Jared Bowen and Kamil Krasicki are long gone. However, this is a side that did really, really well in League One last year. And that win against Preston, look, Preston haven't been great. Let's be perfectly honest. I think Preston are in a wee bit of trouble, if I'm honest, but they have, you know, Hull got some talent here. It's a very kind of tight knit squad. They were really, really good last year. There's Keane Lewis Potter, who plays on the left wing. He's someone who, you know, has been promoted to that number 11 shirt, and they have real faith that he's going to go on and do big things. But to be perfectly honest with you, this is a side, and you look at the squad, you look at the depth, you look at the names on the team sheet that Fulham 100% should be beating. Now, again, we know for a fact that that doesn't always mean that Fulham do beat these teams. But you know, on paper, this is not a game that Fulham could afford to lose, especially given how tight it is at the top now. And I know that's ridiculous to say after three games. But, you know, the top six are all on 7 points. There are some good sides in this Championship. We saw West Brom, even if they are long throws FC, you know, do an absolute job on Sheffield
United. It was awful, wasn't it? I can't watch that. I mean, like, fair enough, lads, but oh, God.
It was rubbish. But, like, they did that doesn't matter. Like, they won 4-0 and they were good value for that 4-0 win as well. Like, how they get there is a different question. You know, QPR with a massive win. I think Stoke are going to be a bit of a problem as well. So, you know, there's games here that Fulham can't afford to be dropping points in. There are games around those that, you know, you play the top teams, you get a draw occasionally, you look at it and go, oh, we should have won by more, we should have won that game, whatever. You know, like games like Borough, right, where you look at it and go, it's a disappointment that we haven't got the points, but Borough are probably going to be in and around it at the end of the season. Hull are not. And therefore, you have to look at this and go, Fulham need 3 points here or else. And the teams are going to come to the cottage now and they're going to set up for draws, right? The Fulham good results this year are going to come on the road. They're going to be, you know, the big wins, the real like classics, the ones where Fulham look like they're absolutely unplayable, I think are going to come on the road. The ones at the cottage are going to be tighter. They're going to be more grim affairs, I think, unless Fulham can get in and around them early. And if we can do what we did at Millwall and absolutely sprint out the blocks, then I think this whole side are there for the taking. But you have to assume they're going to come and set up for a draw to try and nick anything at Fulham. And therefore, it's going to be one of those games where you just can't afford to be dropping any points in it.
Yeah. Peter, it'd be important to try and get that win at Craven Cottage as well. It's been an awfully long time.
6 months.
Since we have actually won
at home.
Is it
6 months? Is it really as long as that? My goodness. That will be really important, just to blow away the cobwebs for fans to see this team play in full flow. If Fulham can manage that, I think Hull are a really good opposition to try and do that against. Jack, I was going to say the same thing as Jack, actually. It was a really good point that you know, teams are going to set up to defend at Craven Cottage. You know, if you get anything out of a trip to Craven Cottage now, considering the first three performances, the way Fulham have played, how everyone's talking about them, no one's going to come to Fulham, really, aside maybe from the top two or three, and try to just take the game to Fulham. And that'll be where it's interesting. And it'll be on the road where those spaces open up more easily because of home fan expectation. And that's going to be the challenge. And you know, Jack outlined it well. Hull were very, very good last year. Still expect them to do okay this year, still expect them to stay up in the division. They've got a good manager in Grant McCann who seems to have built a really cohesive unit there. But in terms of the quality gap, again, these are results that you want to put away. I think looking back historically, I had a look and, you know, teams can afford to drop maybe 14, 15 results generally. I mean, most teams, particularly in the last half decade or so, have dropped points in that around that amount of games, which actually was quite a lot. I was quite surprised by So obviously it's not the end of the world if the draws pick up a little bit, but you just want to get that early momentum. We talked about how important August is. So far, Fulham have just passed every test. We're flying colours. If they can keep doing that, head into Stoke, which is, I think, the first proper test of the season in good form, then things bode well. So it a lot will depend. Hopefully, as mentioned before the break, that the Dekatova Reed and Onomar aren't serious injuries. And I think Silva said before the game that Dekatova Reed was a minor injury. So let's hope that's the case, because the squad is thinning out quite a bit. You know, Harrison Reed has been on the cusp of coming back for a while, according to the manager, but we still haven't seen him. So bringing back that competition, obviously Harry Wilson's not available for this one. He won't be available for the Carabao Cup. So yeah, I think that's the one thing this year that could derail an issue.
It's true. Although players. Peter, we can't be dropping points to Hull if we want to beat Reading's points record. That's exactly what I say.
Yeah, we've got to get to 200 points this season. So it's going to be a long old slog, and we can't drop points against Hull if we want to do that. Right, let's finish with the pod name, Jack Collins. What are we going for?
Julian Hares, Den and Dusted. I like that. Perfect. It feels like a pod name, doesn't it? It feels like a name.
You've made me very happy there, Jack. That's the perfect podcast name for today. Well, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on Sunday reacting to the game against Hull. Let's see if we can get 3 points. Fingers crossed that is the case. And my last thing to do today is thank my guest, Jack Collins.
Thank you very much, Sammy.
And Peter Rutzler.
No, thank you, Sammy. It's been good.
Keep an eye on Peter's socials on Friday for all the team news after Marco Silva's press conference. And thank you very much for listening today. So have a good week. Let's hope for 3 points from you whites.
You whites!